This episode is sponsored by Lockheed Martin. At Lockheed Martin, veterans are at the center of everything they do. In fact, one in five of their employees has served in uniform. Lockheed Martin is proud to help men and women like you successfully transition into civilian careers. Join Lockheed Martin and you will find opportunities to take on the same kind of long-term, challenging assignments you tackled while in the military. Whether you're on active duty, transitioning, or already embarking on your civilian career, Lockheed Martin's Military Connect is your online community for professional support. You can find out more at lockheedmartin.bravenew.com. That's lockheedmartin.bravenew.com. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to equip military veterans to succeed in their civilian career. Today's episode number 224 with Patricia Collins.
We're in such a digital world that, working at a desk 9 to 5 is not normal anymore. And there is more latitude of, working from home or working from, a coffee shop or something along those lines.
Well, I found this interview extremely energizing. After the loss of her leg, Patty continued to serve on active duty and eventually competed for the U.S. in the Paralympics. In this interview, she talks about how her accident changed her view on athletics and how to shift one's thinking from post-traumatic stress to post-traumatic growth. We talk about the difficulties veterans face in their career transition around finding a new identity and how to get out of your comfort zone and find new goals to combat this. We talk about the imposter syndrome, work-life balance, consulting, and more. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes that list all the resources we discuss in this interview, as well as over 220 interviews just like this. And it's not too late to take part in our 2018 pledge drive. If you Google iTunes Beyond the Uniform or Apple Podcast Beyond the Uniform, it takes about 15 seconds to leave a positive review for this show, which gets it in front of more veterans. And you don't need to be an Apple user or enthusiast to do so. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Patricia Collins. Joining me today in Alexandria, Virginia, is Patty Collins. Patty, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I wanted to give listeners just a very abbreviated background. So Patty is a principal at the McChrystal Group, which has leadership development offerings that are designed to equip leaders with the knowledge and tools to shape culture and cultivate performance within their organizations. Patty served as an Army communications officer for over 24 years and spent over 7 of those years assigned to special mission units within the Joint Special Operations Command. After her transition from the military, Patty was a member of the 2016 U.S. Paralympic team, representing the U.S. in the sport of triathlon in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. She holds a master's degree from the National War College and a Bachelor of Arts from Rutgers University. And so, Patty, maybe to start things off, I would love to talk just briefly about the role that sports has played in your life. For listeners, I'll include a link to a few videos Patty's done talking about this. But I'm doing my first half Ironman on Sunday, and I saw that you are the world record holder for female single amputees in an Ironman. You have mountain biked with President Bush. You have represented the U.S. in Rio. I'd love to learn a little bit more about the role that sports has played in your life, and if you're comfortable talking about your injury and that road to recovery.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I will say that I am a lifelong athlete, and then I will caveat it with athlete is our own definition, right? So I would say that I was a mediocre high school athlete at best. I was a runner, cross-country runner. And then I found triathlon shortly after, there's an ambulance behind me. Shortly after high school, I found triathlon. And so that had always been part of my life. It was always a hobby. It was also my way to de-stress after, a hard day of work or whatever. It came into play later in my life much more significantly than I ever thought it would. And I'll sort of explain that as we go. My injury was not related to combat. I had come home from Iraq after a deployment and I was hit by a car while bicycling. The short version of that story is I went through a period of really mentally hard times and diagnosed depression. And I didn't realize necessarily why. I knew I was unhappy in my current position. I didn't know how my injury was going to heal and what it would look like. And this was before electing to amputate. But really what I learned was, since sport was always my outlet, just the physiological benefits of sport on your, you know, your mental well-being as well as your physical well-being. I had lost that for a period of time and just had a challenge coping with, you know, a new identity of who I was and what I was doing. And so I elected to amputate at about 10 months post-injury. And, you know, with the help and support and a lot of encouragement from a lot of friends, got back into sport. And, you know, I jokingly say I was a decent athlete before, but becoming someone with a physical disability involved in para sports, I realized that that was a whole new opportunity for me to compete on a different level. And, I mean, just an amazing opportunity. And so, you know, I categorize my injury as one of the best things that ever happened to me because it changed me in so many ways, both mentally and physically. And one of the ways is it gave me this platform for sports that I didn't know would ever exist for someone like me. And then on the mental side of it, just really coming to the conclusion that everyone goes through challenges in their life, whether you can see their challenge or not see their challenge, whether it's a physical injury or just, you know, some mental challenges or, you know, loss of a family member, whatever that might be. We all have those challenges. And understanding that we could all, you know, be there for someone else and, you know, acknowledging that someone is going through something difficult, I think makes us better people, right? So we're there for someone else, like, you know, just as people were there for me. And just because someone is having an off day, just because they look like everything is fine, doesn't mean that everything is fine. So that was, you know, another benefit to me going through what I did with, you know, struggling with depression, struggling with a significant physical injury. Those were all beneficial things to me. Obviously not when they first happened. I mean, I certainly went through a feeling of, you know, struggle and feeling sorry for myself and things of that nature. But I think that strengthened me a lot. And, you know, we talk about post-traumatic stress in our world a lot, but we never talk about post-traumatic growth. And scientifically, you know, 30% of the people that go through a traumatic event are going to come out of it with some sort of positive growth. And those are things that we should probably really applaud and talk about more, instead of dwelling on, you know, the bad side or the stress side.
That, I mean, that's fantastic. I never heard that post-traumatic growth. And I mean, I appreciate your candor in addressing the depression, which I can only imagine that change in identity and the change in physical ability and the deprivation of such a huge stress reliever. I imagine 99.9% of people, if not 100, would respond in exactly the same way. But I also really admire that post-traumatic growth. I think that's just such an incredible flip side to the coin, and it doesn't seem like it gets a lot of attention. And I just feel like the tenacity in that story of the fact that you view this as one of the best things that ever happened to you and how it reshaped athleticism for you. And it's just really incredible to see how you responded to that. And you're not sugarcoating the darker times that you went through, but that you went through them and you came out the other end stronger. And I imagine that tenacity is representative of a lot of the things in your life and in your career, but it's cool to have this spotlighted in this specific example.
Thank you. And to bring it back to sports, because that was your initial question, I think that people's involvement in sports really is shaping and defining in so many ways. When we think about, and there's certainly some literature that supports this, people that were on sports teams, whether it was in grade school, high school, or college, there are certain attributes that they develop along the way that are always going to help them later in life. One of the things I like to talk about is you understand what it's like to be part of a team and accountable to something bigger than yourself. And that's, you know, you learn that in sports. Or, you know, I think about the early morning swimmer that can be on pool deck at 5:30. Like, you've got some dedication that you choose to show up every day at that, you know, ungodly hour. And those are all beneficial things that came from sport. So I think those are always great things. I'm looking forward to hearing about your half Ironman. And then I will caution you, you know, on a little bit of a different level, when someone accomplishes a big event like that or something you've been training for a long period of time, there is a little bit of that, you know, kind of post-event letdown. because you've accomplished this big goal, and then you kind of say, well, now what? You know, what's my next big thing? So it's natural and it's normal. And but, you know, I think if you don't set those big goals for yourself, and this is for anyone, then you don't really know what you can accomplish. So just, you know, kind of be prepared for that and embrace that.
I love that. And I'm still stuck on this post-traumatic growth. I participate in this men's group each week. And one of the things we were talking about recently was what the organizer calls the void, and just kind of that period of challenge and not knowing and feeling lost and just feeling just overwhelmed that we all experience at different points multiple times throughout our life. And it sounds like your injury was one of those. And I know that for this is, I think, the 218th interview, I would say the vast majority of people I've had on the show face that void experience when they leave the military, and their identity shifts and their community shifts and their connections shift, and they're just so much pivots in their life. And I just think I don't think I've had someone on the show who so eloquently spoke to that as you did about the just the necessity that those challenges play in our life and how those lead to growth. And I think for myself, and I think most people would agree, most of the most significant growth in my life has come from obstacles, challenges, failures, loss, like all the things that we struggle so difficultly with to avoid in our life are the things that very much lead to this growth, not always enjoyably, but lead us to evolve and lead us to mature. And I think that that's great for anyone listening who is going through that transition, or maybe they're out of the military, they're going through a career transition or a life transition, or they've faced some sort of injury, to hopefully take solace in that, to know that there is some good that comes out of that, a lot of good that comes out of that. And we don't often talk about that, the difficulty of going through the process and getting to that growth.
Yeah. And I think I liked how you talked about like transitioning from the military. It's an enormous step, whether you stay for 4 years or 30 years. It's huge. And we fail to acknowledge that. And when we think about someone leaving the military, especially with many, many years in that way of life, you know, we've achieved a level of status and expectation. And that transition is difficult. And it is very much about identity. And I think one of the ways that can be helpful, and this is as it relates to growth, is having that tight network of people around you. When I made my last military move back to Alexandria, Virginia, I knew I was probably going to retire out of that assignment. And I really worked hard toward making connections, starting just with, you know, my neighbors across the street, because that's not, you know, you think about in today's society, we don't do as good of a job of meeting our neighbors as we used to. And it seems silly, but I made a point to do that, and then kind of got involved in some community initiatives and activities. And so I felt like as I was transitioning, I already had this connection to my community that didn't revolve around all my friends weren't military necessarily anymore. I certainly had other friends. And then I have a son. So when you become a parent, now you have your friends are also your kids' friends' parents. So that's a more, you know, diverse population. And then setting some new goals of things that you want to accomplish. Obviously, they're starting a new job. And many of us will find out that we're in a new job where we used to maybe be in a supervisory position and now we're not, or now it's at a smaller scale or a different scale where we're learning a new sector of business. And, all of that is a challenge. So learning those things was part of my transition, but then also having I could pause and say, okay, this is just a process I'm getting through. So, it's going to turn out okay.
Well, since we're on that point of transition, could you share a little bit more about your own transition from 24 years of active duty, what that was like transitioning to your first civilian job and how you approached that?
Yeah. And I mean, as you kind of talked to about earlier, I actually took a year off when I retired because I wanted to train and see if I could, you know, make it to the Paralympics. And so what an amazing opportunity. And I realized that was not, that's not something that's an option for everyone, but it was an amazing opportunity for me. And I viewed it really as this may turn into me not making the team, but what an incredible journey it'll be along the way. So, you know, give it a whirl. I also made some decisions about, you know, 2 years prior that I definitely wanted to take some time off. So started making some financial decisions to put me in a place where that was possible, not easy, but possible. And I would encourage that, even if it's only like, you know, 30 days of time off, to just really do some soul searching and quiet time and figure out like, what do you want to be when you grow up? I realized that, I had an IT background, which I enjoyed, but it was not something that I wanted to pursue, after I transitioned. And it's not that I didn't like it, but I used to equate it to, nobody ever calls their cable company or their cell phone service provider and said, hey, thanks for my great service today, right? We always call with like to complain or to have a challenge or to have something unresolved. And so I jokingly say that was my entire career. And that's not entirely true, but that was certainly a lot of my job. So I wanted to do something different. And I realized later on, probably the latter part of my career, that what was most inspiring and exciting to me was the people side of it. What made a team work well together and what didn't. And so then I started just, you know, kind of talking to some colleagues and really coming to the conclusion that leader development was something that I was really passionate about and was really exciting to me, executive coaching, things of that nature. And I think what we also sometimes fail to realize in the military is we receive so much training on leadership, even from a very, very young age in our time in service. And we just make an assumption that the rest of corporate America has these same programs, and that's not the case at all. And so that was something that I knew was interesting to me. I was extremely fortunate in that I had served with General McChrystal for a good portion of my career. He was running a consulting firm 2 miles from my house. So, you know, we had talked about it as I was getting close to transition, and they were just starting to really stand up their leadership development department in earnest. And so it was a very easy transition for me. What I was not quite prepared for was we were hiring a lot of super, super talented people without military backgrounds, with PhDs, with, you know, Ivy League educations, and they were incredible. And the interesting thing is it was a very much a self-respecting kind of organization, whereas I was so impressed and in awe of the talent that we were bringing in. I felt as if I wasn't really going to measure up. And then you start talking to those folks and they're so impressed with military service and things that some of the other military members have accomplished, that there was really a lot of mutual respect. And, you know, they had said, well, we were nervous about meeting some of these senior military folks, whereas we felt the same way about them. So that was kind of an interesting chain of events, in that we were both mutually a little bit in awe of each other. Obviously, then you have to get down, you have to work together and do good work. But I think there was a little bit of imposter syndrome in all of us as we, you know, as we started that process.
That's great. I mean, I love that thought of when the dust settles and people lower their guard a little bit, you realize that people are feeling the same way on all sides of the table. For someone who might not be familiar with the McChrystal Group, how would you describe what you do as an organization?
Sure. We're a small company, less than 100 right now. We do some advisory services consulting, where we will partner with a corporation on site with them for, you know, a 4 to 6 month engagement, potentially longer, and really work on helping them either align their strategy or, you know, kind of their operating rhythm. Or some of the, you know, their decision-making forums. Our Leadership Institute, we generally prefer to do a light touch, maybe once a quarter type engagement with them, really focusing on some behaviors and changes within their culture. And then we have a really nice discovery piece that I say has its roots in the military as well. It's a diagnostic, and it starts with a little bit of a survey and then turns into who are the connections in your organization, where are the bottlenecks in your organization, you know, how are you aligned with the work that you're doing? And the product is really, it's based in, really, its roots come from intelligence analysis. And it gives the company what we call like an MRI of this is how you're really operating, which has really been an exciting endeavor that we're doing. And it really started with some very junior military folks, and we've had some great, great help evolving that over time. So that's what we do. Some of our clients are really small consumer product goods that are local to the DC area. And then we have, you know, some Fortune 5 clients. So it's run a very wide gamut. I think it's exciting every day working on the Leadership Institute side, because I might work with someone in healthcare one day and then someone in like financial services the next day. So I'm always learning something either about their business or about their behavior, and it keeps it exciting. And I think one of the things I loved about the military is, you were always doing something different, or once you got pretty competent in the current job that you were in, you were going to PCS and move somewhere else. And so this has been, I've been there about 2 years, but there's been a fair amount of diversity and change and new challenges routinely. So it's not boring by any means.
That's great. I mean, I love that thought of, it sounds like this is advisory services consulting, and it sounds like there's a lot of growth and learning that occurs routinely, where there's a lot of variety and you're always shifting assignments. And so you're always remaining at the forefront of clients and the work that you do. And I imagine that could be great in providing more variety and continued growth rather than just stagnation or every day is the same.
Mm-hmm.
Could you explain what, for someone who's on active duty, your title is principal. What does that right. mean? And what does that translate to on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah. I would say generally someone with, 15 to 30 years of work experience could get hired in as a role of a principal. For example, generally I work with a 3 to 5 person team, partnering with a client. And so I may be a project lead. And then, with support from other, more junior folks and some peer type folks toward developing an engagement. And we get to determine, what do we think their program might look like? There's a lot of interface with a client. There's a lot of listening and whiteboarding that's ongoing. But then when it comes to like planning what that engagement looks like, it's very much a collaborative effort. Overall, I am responsible on whether it goes well or doesn't go well, but it is, and it's absolutely a team effort, a little bit different. I mean, we think of the military as a very hierarchical organization, although the more senior I got in my military experience, the more I realized it was the more collaboratively you work, the better product you're going to wind up with at the end. So I was fairly comfortable working in an environment like this. I work in a place where there's not a lot of emphasis on like job title or status or, something is above or below your pay grade. It's, everyone is really an all hands on deck type of effort. So that is actually quite enjoyable.
And in terms of lifestyle, what's your sense on, I know a lot of listeners are always curious about the work-life balance component. And could you paint the picture in terms of amount of travel or maybe hours per week or how much you have to work on the weekends, just what that work-life balance looks like for you?
Yeah, and I think I was actually, I'll talk a little bit more than just work-life balance. I was actually pretty surprised at, as you make that transition there, in this company for sure, although I see it with others as well, there's a lot more latitude in what works best for you right now. Like I think I said to you, for example, I just picked up my son and we're going to do something for a couple hours and then I'm going to go take a couple of phone calls from home and then I'm going to go back into work later for a meeting. So we're in such a digital world that, working at a desk 9 to 5 is not normal anymore. And there is more latitude of, working from home or working from, a coffee shop or something along those lines. So I will say, I probably work over 40 hours a week, but not significantly so. But a lot of it also is work from wherever you are. Now that doesn't mean that I can't like check out and go on vacation and have time with my family, but there's more latitude. We have a responsible time off policy where I work now, which is not unusual in the corporate world where you're not limited by how much vacation time you have. You know what you need to accomplish on a, regular basis. So, if you're going to take 2 weeks off and go to Patagonia, maybe, if you, as long as your work is done, no one's going to question you. Now you may have to take a meeting or a phone call during that time frame, and that's okay as well. Or you might not. So, there's a lot more latitude on what a normal workday looks like. This isn't true everywhere, but it's certainly true in a lot of places. Also, some of the things that kind of surprised me is I remember from my military days, like contributing to some sort of water fund, whether you had a water cooler or whatever it is. And where I work now, like coffee, tea, soda, seltzer, that's free all day long. We generally have fruit, cereal, rice cakes, peanut butter, generally healthy snack type items all day long, which is, you know, very much a job perk, especially for someone who's going to maybe come in and do a workout before work and then have breakfast right at the office. So that was a new, you know, kind of thing for me coming from the military. I work in an office where we don't have assigned desks or cubicles. Everyone gets a laptop and you plug in wherever you need to be. So that I found really enjoyable, and I've liked that. So I think that that should be something that people are like, wow, that's kind of a new thing to look forward to. Yeah.
That's awesome. And one of the things that we had emailed about beforehand is you had mentioned something about taking time to explore outside interests that may lead to other opportunities. Could you share more about that and what that's meant for you in your life?
Yeah. I will say, you know, on one hand, you work with clients that, you know, maybe you've never worked with before. And I talked about financial services or healthcare, and that kind of opened my eyes to, wow, you know, things that I would not have known about until I had this opportunity. And then maybe that turns into, you know, I have an interest in volunteering in this sector or something like that. I also, I coach triathlon part-time, so I get to still enjoy that love, but in, you know, in a different way. And I think that was important for me. And then I talked a little bit about doing some work in my community, where I think when I was in the military, I never really invested enough because I just assumed I would be moving in a short span of time. So I shouldn't really commit to getting involved. And in retrospect, I would do that differently.
I love that. I mean, I'm just thinking of how many interviews I've done where the person obtained a job or something significant through a seemingly meaningless activity event, running into someone for coffee. And I love that thought of not holding back. And I keep on picturing you in getting to know your neighbors. I think that's such a tactical thing. I don't really know my neighbors that well. And it's such a great way to put down roots and just kind of start establishing a community wherever you're at. You served on were involved with the George W. Bush Team 43. I had one other guest, David Smith, on the show who was involved with them as well. Could you talk a little bit more about your involvement with Team 43?
Yeah, that was a pretty amazing opportunity. And I would also equate that to, like, that would have never happened if I didn't lose a limb, which sounds crazy. So in 2011, George Bush, and I don't know if this is how it started, but this is how I first became involved, took 15 military veterans who had suffered some sort of wound or injury and brought them to Lajitas, Texas, which is, you know, South Texas near the Mexico border. And we went mountain biking for 3 days, which was an incredible opportunity. And then that evolved over time, where he also does a golf tournament. And then the military initiative really evolved into, what are things that are really troubling today's veterans, whether it's mental illness or needing to increase their education or job opportunities or whatever that might be, and starting some programs around that. So it's really evolved over time. I've been fortunate enough that I've gone back to their alumni event two times, so continue to be able to experience that. And I remember being at one particular dinner, I think this was 2 years ago, in Waco, Texas. And this event has grown in size and sponsors from other, you know, great businesses in the community that really want to do something for veterans. And, you know, President Bush was talking and he said, Laura and I are committed to the rest of our lives toward improving the quality of life for veterans. And that just seemed like such a powerful statement to me. And, you know, here's someone who is very frank and very open about, you know, I made some decisions when I was the president that caused some of you to come home different than how you left, right? I sent us to war and this is how you came home. And nobody necessarily signs up to get hurt. You raise your right hand and you do what you're going to do, but no one knows how it's going to turn out. And he said, so my commitment is that I'm going to help you and your community any way I can for the rest of my life. Incredibly powerful. And then I've had an opportunity to talk to him, you know, one-on-one and through bicycling on some trails, an incredibly genuine, dedicated person. And so I preface it with, hey, politics aside, it doesn't matter what you thought of him as a president. When you see how he acts as a human being, as a fellow citizen, as a contributor to society, that's powerful to me. And you can't help but not be, respectful and impressed with what he and his family have chosen to do.
What an incredible experience to have that.
Yeah.
Are there any resources, and I, by that mean books or podcasts or conferences or just anything that's helped you in your civilian career that you would recommend to listeners?
Wow, that is a great question. And I'm not going to give you anything specific, but I would say making a point to, whether it's read or listen to or even just news channels, things that are outside of your comfort zone, to give yourself some different perspective. You know, I think the military sometimes put us in this little bubble. And I would say, hey, you know what, like, listen to the BBC or listen to Al Jazeera or read books that are counter toward things that you thought were important in your life previously, just to get outside perspective. You know, join LinkedIn and take advantage of that. And then even, like, you know, when people go through transition assistance, there's a lot more than just that, you know, 1 week blurb on how you do your out physical and your financial planning and things of that nature. There's tons of resources that link you to your local community or how to start a business or something along those lines that, just taking advantage of those, you know, the event itself may not seem that worthwhile, but you may meet someone at that event that maybe you're going to have a coffee with later and you're going to have some other conversations that may lead you in other places. One thing I thought I wanted to pursue, and I'm not convinced that I won't at some point, is working in the nonprofit social causes network. And I did start traveling down that path, and the timing just didn't necessarily work out. But it really opened my eyes to a lot of social challenges that we have that they were not on my radar previously. Veteran homelessness for one of them, or, you know, just the disadvantaged community that's around me. I mean, you live in Alexandria and it's a fairly economically well-off area, but you don't have to travel very far to realize that there are lots of people that are nowhere near as well resourced as I am, and it's not their fault, right? So what am I doing as a community member to change that perspective? So I would say getting involved in that, finding what your passion is in your community is a great place to start on finding, you know, what really drives you. I think what we miss most about the military is our friendships and our network, but I think it's also about, we were part of something bigger than all of us, and we were part of something that was very much a choice to contribute, to whatever that might be. And so I think there are certainly avenues in the civilian world that will allow us to do the same thing with the same amount of passion. But exploring what those opportunities might be is going to take some effort.
That's awesome. Well, I always like to leave the last question open-ended. And, you know, we've covered a lot of ground in terms of athletics and consulting and challenge and all sorts of great things. I'd love to just make space for what have we not talked about that you want to make sure listeners know before we wrap up?
Wow. Yeah, that's a good one. And I will leave it with family, because a lot of us transitioning have a family, whether it's a spouse and kids or anything like that, really working hard to bring them into the transition process. I mean, my son was really little when I retired, but you know, considering what was important to him, you know, not moving because he was in a great place with school and friends and things like that, or just, you know, really consulting your family on what do you want to do? And I think, you know, sometimes a spouse wants to really have their career take off, and then it's, you know, it's time for the military member to take, you know, maybe like a little bit of a backseat, but, there are things that they want to do, new experiences that they want to have, and bringing them into the picture and the conversation, I think, is really important. And I think that, it may be surprising what, you know, what family members want to offer as, you know, what they're going to miss about the military and what they're going to love about the new adventure that lies ahead for them.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today, and thank you for taking the time to connect with me and the Beyond the Uniform audience.
Surface.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Beyond the Uniform. There are over 200 free episodes at beyondtheuniform.io. They're classified by the industry of focus, the functional role the person plays, and more. Beyond the Uniform is hosted, produced, and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our Director of Outreach, responsible for sponsorship and guest episodes, is Steve Bain. Our editor, responsible for the show notes and text transcripts for all episodes, is Kathleen Dillon. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge. If you are enjoying Beyond the Uniform, you can help us out by telling your veterans and friends in the military about this free resource. There is more information on the website about how you can sponsor an episode or donate to our program to help us grow the work that we're doing. Be sure to check out the coaching section of beyonduniform.io, where you can be paired with professional, subsidized coaches to help you figure out your next career move. You can sign up for our newsletter to be up to date on the latest happenings at Beyond the Uniform. And in each show notes section, there is a link to audible.com, which is providing a free audiobook of your choice to Beyond the Uniform listeners. You get a free book of your choosing, and Beyond the Uniform gets $15 to subsidize the cost of the show, regardless of whether you continue with audible.com or not. Check that out and more in the show notes for this episode. Keep the feedback coming. Let me know what resources would help you in your career, and we'll do our best to make that happen. Take care, be safe, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.